This is Idaho Sports Talk, Idaho's longest-running sports talk show. Now, the voices of Bronco Athletics, Bob Beeler and Chris Lewis on Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.
NFL draft has come and went. You better be happy with your team selections because you can't do them over. For Boise State, sixth time in the last 11 years, they've had at least two players picked. Jeremy McNichols goes in the fifth round to Tampa Bay, and that was followed up in the sixth round by linebacker Tanner Vallejo going to Buffalo. A couple of other guys signing free agent contracts, Sam McCaskill, defensive tackle who we'll visit with tomorrow at 1:15 with the Vikings. Thomas Spurbeck, Jonathan Moxie with Tampa Bay coming up at 3:15 today. You will hear from Dirk Cutter, the Bucs coach, about taking McNichols and signing Spurbeck and Moxie, and Travis Averill went to Atlanta as a free agent. So, Chris, Boise State players get to continue their post-college football experience.
Well, the number one is Jeremy McNichols, and that's where you begin. Of course, you mentioned the first one that was named, I think, later than we thought on this show. I don't know if you gave a final round prediction on where you thought he'd go.
I just said I thought he'd go fourth. Saturday.
I thought it'd be fourth round and happened to be a round later, but it did bring up feelings of not watching J.H.I.E. get drafted. You saw it go a couple of rounds a little bit later than you thought, but you figured eventually you'd hear it called, and with McNichols, you did. Now, with running backs, it wasn't the fact that McNichols wasn't getting selected. Part of it, at least as a Boise State fan, it just hurt that Jamal Williams is going, that DJ Pumphrey's going. So you just see a couple of other of these names off the board where you're like, dang, man, I just thought McNichols was better and would have been cooler to see McNichols, you know, selected ahead of those guys. But it just came to a spot where, and we talked about it heading into the draft quite a bit, that there's so many more guys than there are teams that need running backs. And then you get to the point where in the fifth round, somebody met like McNichols is still available. On the draft show, no matter which one you watch, they were praising the pick because it's like, wow, this is a guy that you thought was be a pretty good. He can probably start if things go kind of the way you would hope in training camp. And you're able to get a guy like that in the fifth round, which maybe goes to show you that at that point, a lot of teams are looking for somebody who can master one skill. Like, you know, Pumphrey's really good in terms of being quick and can catch. And maybe that's what a team's looking for, a specific skill set that late than they are an all-around type back. But it just goes to show you at the top of the draft, and it's something that maybe the Ezekiel Elliott effect had changed things in the 2017 draft, that people were more willing to select running backs. But if you told me that McNichols would still be available in the fifth round and there was teams that were spending top five selections overall in the draft on running back, like, does it really make more sense to use up a top five pick on Leonard Fournette when you could get a guy like Jeremy McNichols in the fifth round? And to me, I still don't see the value of picking running backs that high. And the thing that highlights it is that the Boise State star McNichols is somebody who's available that late.
I think also maybe his shoulder injury hurt him a little bit, much like Jay's injury situation the year before. I think sometimes when you're looking for a position that has a very short shelf life, I think you're looking for somebody to be as healthy as possible, and I think that might have knocked him down maybe a round or so. But I agree with you. I mean, I think unless you think this running back is a every down back that is going to be a flat out difference maker, and you've got a lot of other positions that are already taken care of, like Dallas did. Mm-hmm. Dallas had a lot last year going for them, and that was a position they needed. But a lot of these teams taking, does Jacksonville have that much going for it with Leonard Fournette?
Man, they don't. How many years do you have to be that bad before you realize that your roster probably needs a lot more, and a lot of defense too? They keep giving up leads, but Jamal Adams is there, a safety who a lot of people had high grades on, and they say, hey, running back from LSU more important than a safety from LSU. So it's a little bit confusing, and maybe Ezekiel Elliott, Fournette will be the next one of those. But 10 times out of 10, give me McNichols later, give me Jamal Williams later, and a lot of these other guys who can probably be given the right situation. They probably need a great offensive line, but doesn't every running back need a great offensive line?
Yes.
And given the short shelf life that you mentioned, you're probably not going to get that many years out of these guys. Like, I think McNichols is in a great spot. Mm-hmm. And now the thing is, a couple of Boise State guys, and Dirk Cutter, by the way, will be on Idaho Sports Talk at 3:15. The head coach of Tampa, so I'll be looking forward to listening to what he has to say about McNichols. And now the Boise State backfield with Martin still there, but Doug won't play in the first three games if he's he's on the roster next year. So now Charles Sims was a factor in that backfield. Jaquizz Rodgers was a factor in that backfield last year. But in terms of a path to playing time, they're going to need to have that extra back because what we presume is their starter, and Doug Martin, isn't going to be there for the first three games. So now you add in the opportunity to play combined with his ability. You have to like at least the potential starting, and now a lot can go wrong. You can get injured in training camp, and you could lose that opportunity right out the gate. But I do like it for Jeremy at the start of things.
Going to Tanner Vallejo, if I'm Tanner, I'm hoping McDermott, the head coach of the Bills, was on board for me. Because if he's not, the general manager and the scouts that ran the draft for the Bills are now gone. So I hope that it was McDermott that was calling more of the shots in Buffalo coming in for Rex Ryan, because if not, that could be a little difficult for a lot of guys that were taken by the Bills.
Yeah, that's what it was, right? Like, you can't – the GM and the – it's the weird thing about it, and you've seen this before, where the scouting people, like, it's Black Monday for them is the day after the draft, mm-hmm. and the GM is a little kind of along with it too. You don't want to get rid of them at a certain point in the offseason because they've done so much of the prep for your team going into the draft. But when it comes to making the selections of picks, it can't be the GM, right? It has to be the coach if you know you're getting rid of the GM the day after the draft. So is it that a better spot for Vallejo then, knowing that your coach had more of an impact on this draft than maybe other coaches do on the draft? Now, of course, coaches always have input, but if McDermott was calling more of the shots on the Bills draft and you were selected by him, doesn't that make you feel a little bit better if it was just another run-of-the-mill mm-hmm. late-round pick?
Yeah. So because your coach is the one that's probably going to, in the end, say, here's the guy I can see playing special teams or playing here on the defense. My biggest take, and we didn't work the show Friday. You were out at the tennis. You had the first two matches at the Mountain West Tennis. I thought the trades for the quarterbacks were fascinating.
That's because, an interesting way to say bad.
No, and I'll tell you why. I don't know if it's necessarily bad. We'll see. I think maybe the Bears could have got who they wanted if they wanted the quarterback. But the three teams that felt they needed to make big trades for quarterbacks were Chicago, Kansas City, and Houston. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
The three teams that gave up the picks, San Francisco, Cleveland, and Buffalo, all need quarterbacks. So the people who gave up the picks certainly would want a top-shelf quarterback if that person was there.
Mm-hmm.
So that means the teams are not evaluating the quarterbacks the same way.
Well, put it this way. Cleveland, you're going to have to pick somebody someday. Like, how many years are you going to pass on a quarterback when you have a glaring need at quarterback before it just, like, you're just going to give up hope? Like, Carson Wentz and Jared Goff were there last year. You're in a position to pick them. You said, nah, I don't like either of these two. And you got this year, Trubisky, Watson, and Mahomes. They're all there. And, nah, I don't like any of these guys. So, like, how long can you keep the exercise of keep having early picks because you don't have a quarterback, but then not liking any of the quarterbacks that are available for you to pick? So it was interesting. You're right. The fascinating part was almost the teams that traded the picks that the teams ended up taking the quarterbacks. But, like, for Chicago, it's been discussed. They gave up a lot to move up one spot. Now, my thing with Chicago is they did the same thing Philly did a year ago, where they don't have a plan. Like, the one thing I want from my NFL team, the one thing I want in any squad that I root for, you might not be the best, you might not make every decision right, but at least act like you have a plan.
Mm-hmm.
At least act like you know what you're doing there. Philly did that when they went out and paid all the money to Sam Bradford to keep him around. Then they added in Chase Daniel to keep him, or it was like a $7 to $8 million contract to add him in as one of the more expensive backup quarterbacks in the league. You invest all that money, and then you do your scouting research and fall in love with Carson Wentz and draft him too, and trade up to draft him. So you just didn't have a plan. You're just like, on a whim, let's spend a lot of money to get one guy. All right, on a whim, let's go out and spend a lot of money to get, look at this film of Carson Wentz. So that's not much of a plan. Now, that's exactly what Chicago did here, playing all that money to Glennon, and then ended up trading up for Trubisky. Now, you take a look at the other two situations, Kansas City and Houston. Now, for Kansas City, I'm looking at a team that made the playoffs each of the last couple of years. It's a squad that is very close to a Super Bowl, but they're not going to turn the reins over from Alex Smith to Mahomes, you would think, in 1 year, right? Like, this is still mm-hmm. a situation where Alex Smith is still going to be the guy running the show as the quarterback position. So why would you trade up and get rid of picks, things that could help you take the step from very good to great, and instead take a quarterback who's a project probably a year or two out from being able to play when you're this close to a Super Bowl. Like, if I'm a Chiefs fan, I'm upset because right now we have a window. Why aren't you taking advantage of the window we have right now instead of trading up a bunch to take a guy like this? And then if I'm Houston, it's kind of the same thing. Look at the numbers that Jay Cutler and Colin Kaepernick put up last year. Those numbers you would consider fantastic for a rookie. It's almost unreachable for a rookie to put up the numbers that those guys. If you feel like you're a quarterback away from winning a championship, why don't you get one of those veteran guys who on a bad year puts up the numbers that a rookie quarterback would put up on a good year and take your chances with that, with a roster that's all set for you to go and win the Super Bowl in 2017. So those, I didn't like to trade up for a quarterback for any one of those teams.
Tampa Bay Buccaneer head coach Dirk Cutter is going to join Idaho Sports Talk today at 3:15. Get the details on the McNichols draft, plus the free agency status of Spurbeck and Moxie. It's all on the ticket today at 3:15. When we come back, more on the draft. Might Boise State football fans get a chance to see the number one pick play on the blue next year? We'll be back with more on Sports Radio, The Ticket. The draft. Somebody will end up being better than you expect, and somebody will end up being much more of a bust than you expect. That's what makes the draft so good. Chris, remember last week when we were looking back at the first round, you're listening to the Bob and Chris part of Idaho Sports Talk. We're here from 1 to 3. Caves and Prater will be along from 3 until 6. There were about 6 out of 30, roughly, 32, 6 or 7, every year that end up being really good in the first round. There are some that are complete busts, and there's some that are just decent players. So it's not an exact science. Most of these guys that are taken in the first round are not going to be fantastic. They're going to be serviceable and decent, but there aren't that many impact players out there every year in the first round.
But it's the day after the weekend of the draft, so everybody just fixed every hole that they need, and every pick will reach their complete potential, and there's going to be no bust. That's always how we talk about it. But you're right, it differs on position, too. Some drafts are heavier some than the others. You can go back to the awful quarterback draft of 2013 as an example of what we kind of think is a bad, 2013 is a bad draft. I don't even know what position had a good first round. Eric Fisher was the number one pick. Luke Jokel was number two. Deion Jordan was number three. Lane Johnson was number four.
You haven't named me anybody that's worth having.
There's Tavon Austin was in the top 10.
No.
If he was in a better situation, D. Milner was in the top 10. Jonathan Cooper, he was a terrible draft. 2013 might be the gold standard of, sometimes this just doesn't work out the way you want it to. But that's the thing about the NFL draft. There's always next year in the draft, too. And next year is supposed to be even more stacked than this year, at least in the quarterback part.
And that's a lot of times what the draft is graded on. And a lot of people right now are saying that a guy that you're going to see wearing a white jersey on the blue on October 21st might be the number one pick in the NFL draft, and we're speaking of Josh Allen at Wyoming. I think he's good, but I don't know that I'd be willing to go there. I mean, he's a guy that moves, he's got good size, he's got a good strong arm, but I'd like to see a little more from him before I'd say he's the number one pick for an NFL draft.
I think it's kind of crazy. I'm not going to sugarcoat it here. Now, I see some of the things. He's 6'5". You mentioned the mobility.
Mm-hmm.
He ran around and made a couple of off-schedule plays against Boise State in the Wyoming win.
And he did that against San Diego State in the game they beat them, too.
Yeah, so he's pretty good off-schedule. Dude completed 56% of his passes last year with Wyoming. An offense that was extremely run-heavy, right? Brian Hill, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but that offense was not centered around Josh Allen. That offense was centered around Brian Hill and his ability to run and gather nearly 100 yards in every game. And everything that they did, every defense that came into a matchup against Wyoming, it wasn't, oh my God, we're up against one of the most talented quarterbacks who can sling it all over and tear us apart, pick us apart through the air. Going into every game, it was, all right, we got to stop Brian Hill. So we haven't seen Josh Allen exactly have to carry the offense. And last year, again, with everything that went well in a running game, only completed 56% of his passes. He threw 15 interceptions last year. You know what? If I'm Brett Rypien, this just makes me extremely ticked off. Like, dude, in the Mountain West, it runs through me. As a freshman, the 2 years that I've been able to play, I've been named All Mountain West. I'm the guy who can sling it all over the place in this conference. When we talk about passing leaders in the Mountain West, it starts with number four on Boise State. Why is everybody talking about some dude on Wyoming that I just destroyed when it comes to numbers across the board? Like, if I'm Brett Rippon, this just makes me extremely mad. Like, I'm the best quarterback in this league. The people who watch the league, who vote on all conference, have told everybody that Brett Rippon is the best quarterback. Why should we think that somebody else in this league at my position is the number one pick in the draft next year? Yeah, if I'm Brett Rippon, that would motivate me to just try to show this guy up.
I think it's going to be interesting to see what he does, meaning he, Allen, does without Brian Hill as a running back, what Wyoming does. Now, Craig Bolitz, the head coach at Wyoming, gets credit for Carson Wentz, so he's probably going to get credit for Josh Allen. Of course, he didn't finish up with Wentz. I think Wentz played, 2 years after Bol left, but he was the one that kind of got him started. But I want to see a little more. Allen didn't play much the year before, played all of last year. I want to see a little more body of work before I say he's that good and be picked in that spot.
And this will probably generate a lot of the reaction that Trubisky did. Like, somebody traded up for Trubisky, Chicago, and I think it was met with a lot of skepticism because not a lot of people were checking for Trubisky throughout the year. Now, Allen, I guess people will be checking for him. This time, we're months before the season, and he's getting hype as the number one pick in the draft, so maybe he will get that kind of attention. But a part of it is, if we saw Trubisky play on TV and if he switched spots with Deshaun Watson and was leading Clemson to a championship, the fact that somebody traded up to pick Trubisky, I didn't think would be met with as much criticism, which goes to show you, like, what exactly do they think is the thing that translates to the league? Because I'm taking a look at Tom Brady. Tom Brady is not as tall as Josh Allen, definitely not as mobile as Josh Allen. He gets it to work, right?
Mm-hmm.
Russell Wilson, he's more mobile than Josh Allen, but he's nowhere near as tall. He's really good. I don't think Allen throws the ball like Cam Newton. Like, you could say, like, Cam Newton's also bigger, he's stronger, weighs more, throws the ball just a lot with a lot more velocity than Josh Allen. So what I'm saying is, what is it about Allen that somehow translates more smoothly to the NFL when NFL quarterbacks may just come in all different shapes and sizes? Blake Bortles has typical quarterback measurements from what traditionally 6'5", a little bit mobility, but he's been trash in the NFL so far. He's not been any good. Blaine Gabbert was another one of these guys. They contrasted him with Cam Newton in the draft that both of those came out on, and Gabbert was supposed to be the more NFL prototype, and he was trash from the moment he started at Jacksonville too. So I don't believe in the quote-unquote prototype is where I'm getting at with this, and Allen might fit it, but if he's not more productive in the Mountain West than Brett Rippon, there's something to be said for that. There is a lot of Drew Brees. I mean, Fish, you're a Saints fan. Drew Brees is what, 6 foot, 6'1", if that?
Yeah, if you play basketball, they'd announce him at 6'1". He's about 5'9", 5'10".
Exactly, and he makes it work. Ben Roethlisberger makes it work, and he's big and mobile. So it has more to do with what this guy has than what their measurables are.
Sticking with quarterbacks, you mentioned Kaepernick and Cutler. Where do these guys go, and do they go? Because I got to believe somebody's going to have to think that they're better than what they got.
Now, who needs a quarterback?
A lot of teams.
The draft is over, and that was supposed to be the next domino. And, all right, well, you can't really say that something fishy is going on with Cutler and Kaepernick because we still haven't had the draft yet, and some of these teams are saving up for the draft. All right, the draft's over now.
The Browns do.
Okay.
I think the 49ers do, and one of the two guys that was let go was a 49er.
Mm-hmm. How about the Jets?
Yeah, well, they probably do. They needed it for a while. They probably need one since Joe Willie Namath.
So those are three teams.
Boomer Esiason, and I'll give him Boomer played pretty well for them.
But yeah, Kaepernick is not going to end up on the 49ers because he just left them. New York, Cleveland. But, I mean, you're getting to the point where
Buffalo?
You're late in the process. Now, Buffalo has Tyrod. And then they also
I don't think he's any good.
I think Tyrod's pretty good. I think you're underselling Tyrod a bit. And they also have drafted a quarterback at each of the last two drafts, Cardale Jones, and they drafted one this year too. So, yeah, I don't think Buffalo is going to be in the market for it. But the options aren't very big. But now, if you wanted to make that case that the league is blackballing Kaepernick, the next month or two is what's going to tell you the answer to that. Because if he's still not even getting any interest, when there are still some teams that need quarterbacks,
I'd say the draft is over. Looking at what is out there, I think those are the three, which you mentioned, Cleveland, San Francisco, and what was the
Jets.
And the Jets. I think those are the three that are the most likely, with the Jets probably being the furthest along, where one quarterback might be able to help them more than the other two spots.
Yeah, they're really bad, though, too. So, yeah, those are bad teams. Whoever lands on those teams are not set up for success. Plus, you're kind of late in the offseason, so you're at a disadvantage in that way, too. But I am interested to find out, all right, like, as a league, are you saying that Kaepernick's not good enough to play in the NFL? Because there's a lot worse guys who have jobs. If he can't land with one of those three teams at this point, then there's something up.
I've got a gut feeling that one of those guys is going to be unsigned in the camp, and maybe both of them.
And that's what's wrong with the NFL, actually, in a way. And it's not at the quarterback position. And Kaepernick has a lot of other things that are a part of it, sure, too. And Cutler's actually coming off of surgery, too. So you can make that excuse if you want to make it. But it's an example of why the NFL, in a way, you get bad football in September and October. Because that's not the only position where there's vets out there who are probably better than a lot of the guys who will be on rosters at the beginning of the year. Jamal Charles still looking for work, a productive running back in the NFL for a while. But they've created a system where everybody goes so young and so cheap because, you know, the way the draft goes, the contract structures from when you have a certain amount of time in the league, what the minimum is, to where they set it up where it's so advantageous for you to just bring in a bunch of young guys, but yet now you don't have the time of the offseason thanks to the new rules that they've put in. They're not allowed to have as many OTAs and a lot of the offseason activities. So you can't coach all these young guys. So now you get terrible football in September and October because there ain't no vets. You have a bunch of young guys who haven't been coached. So congratulations, NFL. You have a terrible product in September and October because of the own system that you put in that excludes veterans from being on rosters.
Enter to win a $4,000 giveaway for your mom for this Mother's Day by going to KTIK.com. Cash is king for your queen. The $4,000 Great Mother's Day giveaway is sponsored by Peterson Auto Group with 5 stores, 10 brands, and over 1,800 new and used vehicles. Peterson Auto Group likely has your perfect car. Fish, what do we got coming up in the update?
Well, there's a handful of Boise State players that are headed to the NFL. Plus, we had the KTIK Madden tournament over the weekend. There were 2 guarantees made on this radio station. One came true, one did not. We'll explain next on the sports update on Idaho Sports Talk.
The Ticket Sports Update.
Ticket Sports Update is sponsored by Big Judd's. Try the all-new deep-fried pickle spear and nacho burger at Big Judd's on Protest Hill near Boise State and on Meridian on Overland near Eagle Road. And we had the KTIK Madden tournament over the weekend. Somebody on this radio station guaranteed a championship. And it would not be the man on hold, Justin, who actually won. That would be you, Chris Lewis. Justin beat you in the first round, and here he is.
I wasn't quite the first round, but hey, Justin, congratulations on winning the tournament. You did a great job. Now, use the Raiders. What went behind the decision to use the Raiders?
Yeah, that's just my real-life team, so, you know, I got to go with the hometown squad. It doesn't hurt that they're a pretty good Madden team on top of it.
All right, yeah, what was the strategy there? Because you were in it last time, right? This was our second installment of the Madden tournament, so what did you learn from the first time?
Yeah, the strategy, well, the shortened quarters, you know, it's a whole new game. So, you know, take care of the ball, you know, extend the drives. And so on the defensive side of things, I want to get pressure from the side. So I brought a lot of corner blitzes and whatnot. And then on the offense, I ran a lot of drag routes, ran the ball, you know, hold on to that ball.
Now, you beat me and you beat Fish, right? And route to winning this championship. So how satisfying was it to just destroy Idaho Sports Talk?
Yeah, no, that felt great. Especially after you guaranteed a title on the radio.
Yeah, I know. That threw a bad interception, too. But in the championship, you faced when your homies in Tomas there, the defending champ, from the last time we did it, and you just whooped him. Like, it wasn't even close. So when you guys face each other, is that usually the result?
Yeah, no. He was getting a little too much love from everyone there. He was shutting everybody out, and so I had to show him what time it was. So, yeah, no, when we play at home, I usually beat him, I'd say, 4 out of 5 times. He gets me every once in a while.
Down to a fun tournament at Dave & Buster's. We set it up as a 16-team bracket. Had some, you know, winner's bracket, of course, a loser's bracket, too. And a lot of food on hand at Dave & Buster's. They do a great job of satisfying us in the Madden tournament. Now, lastly, you won it, yeah. So the 100,000 tickets went your way. What did you do with those tickets?
Yeah, I went straight to the winner's circle and got a PS4.
PS4 for winning a Madden tournament. That sounds pretty good. Well, Justin, congratulations again. Appreciate you being in the Madden tournament. And we're going to try to do this again at some point. So don't enjoy your victory for too long.
Yeah. No, let's do this again. Anybody that's a question about going, you guys put on a great show, provide free food, great prizes, and great hosts.
Thank you, Justin. Appreciate it. Justin.
Hi, man. Have a good day.
The winner of the Madden tournament.
Can I ask a question? When does the 18 version come out? Is it closer to the season, or is it more like in the summer?
Start August.
August.
Right?
Yeah. It's now closer to late August.
They want it to be more accurate?
Yeah. They push it closer to the season. It used to be early August, though. That was actually better. Now, the thing is, that's right at the start of the college, the fall season of athletics, so I might be a little distracted.
He's just making excuses.
He's just trying to
I have another strategy. Right now, I got to
We'll make sure you have whatever weekend it is. We'll make sure you got nothing.
Okay, there we go. We'll make sure it happens.
Now, Chris Lewis, I will give you the opportunity. You did lose before me. However, I was also defeated by Justin, which set up a matchup in the loser's bracket.
Yep.
And Chris Lewis, why don't you tell everyone what happened when you and I faced off in the loser's bracket?
All right, went up with Cincinnati in this game. Fish,
I will be
course.
Say I was gracious. He started the tournament with Arizona.
Yeah.
Said he didn't like their play style, so I graciously allowed him to change teams to a team he wanted to play.
So, you Cincy and Fish, who plays in the highest scoring Madden games of our 2 minute quarters.
Instead, did you play the Saints?
I did play the Saints.
Yes. Okay. So that's kind of why he has no defense. Yeah. But as you know, Brandon Cooks and Drew Brees, he's tough to stop with Brandon Cooks. I've seen a couple of the plays. So my strategy going in, I'm not letting Cooks go deep on me. So made sure I had, you know, a corner playing off the line of scrimmage, safety help back there. So I'm not letting Brandon Cooks go deep. It ended up being 3-3 going into overtime. Low scoring, 3-3. And
but you
overtime,
guys couldn't get the joystick to work right?
Ah, we were good. We each had one possession. And Fish, by the way, with terrible clock
management.
Yeah, I had
the ball at the 2-yard line, 15 seconds left. Did not call a timeout until 5 seconds left.
Did you miss the field goal?
No, I made it, but I should have ran. I should have called timeout, ran a play.
Yeah, he had a chance to.
If I'm a fan, let's get rid of this coach. You can't manage the clock.
I do regret not going for it though, because of how overtime ended. I won the toss, which should be a guaranteed victory in the way we play, because both of us used up all 2 minutes driving down the field. 2nd and 9, throw a nice crossing pattern to Willie Snead. The 4th, he gets tackled by we're still not sure who.
Yeah, I'm
forces
not sure
a fumble.
Who did it. Might have been just say George Iloka.
Yeah, it could have been George Iloka. Forces a fumble. Chris takes it to the house. Didn't even need to play an offensive play.
You had a fumble recovery, scoop and score.
Scoop and score in overtime to beat me 9-3 in the loser's bracket. Oh. So he could still brag despite his guarantee of a championship not coming true.
Still was able to beat Fish. So that was the most important thing. All right, a fun time had by all.
Except me, because you beat me and you wouldn't stop bragging about it.
Yeah. That has to happen. Again, I need to next time, though, lower the expectation. We got some good players in here and at this Madden tournament. Last two times we've done it, and this time we started to get a crowd of people who are watching. On the Twitter page at KTIK93.1FM, watch this play, by the way, of like Antonio Gates winning a game by breaking 18 trillion tackles and scoring a touchdown. That was crazy.
But you said there were some people, like maybe some future players, like a gentleman and his son came out to kind of see how it works.
Yeah.
Maybe they're going to be the people next time.
They were out there scouting. Now they said father and son, they play on the Wii together. Now this is on the PS4, so it's completely different, but they just wanted to see how it's done on this level.
Now, if you are listening, you say, well, I own an Xbox. Don't know if I want to compete. Justin plays on the Xbox.
Oh.
So, which also explain why I got the PS4 now. He has both systems. But yes, he plays on the Xbox. When we were playing each other, he mentioned a couple times you hit the wrong button. So don't be shy if you play on Xbox and don't think your skills will translate, because I believe we've had a winner now who played on Xbox. So don't be shy there. Always can come out and compete. You can probably beat Chris Lewis, even though he owns one of the systems. Now we'll go to the real NFL. Draft was over the weekend. Boys, they had two players drafted. Jeremy McNichols went to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and Tanner Vallejo went to the Bills. And four players have signed as undrafted free agents. Thomas Spurbeck and Jonathan Moxie have both signed with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. their coach. Derek Cutter will be on Idaho Sports Talk at 3:15 to talk about those signings, plus the drafting of McNichols. Travis Averill signed on with the Atlanta Falcons, and Sam McCaskill signed on with the Vikings. Chancellor James has set up tryouts with the Saints and 49ers. We could always use defense. I would use him in Madden. And Mario Yaku, according to the National Football Post, has tryouts set up with the Redskins and Raiders. So four undrafted free agents signed for Boise State, and perhaps two more have at least secured tryouts. So good day overall for Boise State in the NFL draft. That's all we got in the sports update for today. What do you got next, Bob?
Well, when we come back, it's going to be quick hits. And the Warriors said they would rather face the Clippers. Are them fighting words, or why did they rather face the Clippers than the Jazz? That's next in quick hits when we come back on Sports Radio, The Ticket. Time now for quick hits, where Chris and I tackle four topics in rapid fire fashion. Let's go.
Topic number one.
Am I going to ask you first? I guess I will, Chris. What does the latest playoff loss mean for Chris Paul?
It means I got to stop with the nickname, the point god, because he's not the point god if he keeps not getting to the Western Conference Finals. Now, it's not his fault. The Clippers, their biggest problem is they just can't develop anybody. And I don't know if that falls on Doc Rivers. You know what? I do know it falls on Doc Rivers, because he basically runs everything there. But like, they don't value late first round picks enough to actually have somebody on their roster to develop them. They would much rather go get these old guys like Hedo Turkoglu, like Paul Pierce, and generally it doesn't work out. But they never figured out that three position. Now they lost to the Jazz. Jazz move on to face the Warriors. Chris Paul's gotten the reputation of being the best point guard since John Stockton. I don't know if I can say that definitively, because Steve Nash went two MVPs. Steve Nash was the engine of one of the best and most transcendent offenses in basketball history with those Phoenix Suns teams. I can't put Chris Paul, without more success with his team getting deeper into the playoffs, I can't put him over Nash. And I don't know if I can put him over Steph Curry. Curry also won two MVPs. He's been the engine of the most successful team in NBA history over a three-year span in the last three seasons. He could very well get his second ring this year. So Chris Paul has the reputation of being one of the best point guards in NBA history, but I'd make the case he's not the best point guard of his era, and I guess that means I think Chris Paul's overrated.
To me, the onus of what the Clippers do going forward on Steve Ballmer, he basically inherited this team and has done nothing with it. I think the biggest decision for Steve Ballmer is whether Doc Rivers gets fired, and then who you bring in, and do you gut the team. Because the way it stands right now, this group's not winning anything.
Topic number two.
Graduation season is here. Who is someone you didn't expect to see deliver the graduation address?
Big Poppy, David Ortiz, was the speaker at the New England Institute of Technology in Providence. His message was, you deserve to be here. Don't let anyone tell you you can't do things. And his speech focused on failure and resiliency, to come back from failure. And life is based on what you feel you are capable of. So I'm sure he was more entertaining probably than 65% of the graduation speakers out there. So Big Poppy gets a chance to be the graduation speaker at New England Institute of Technology.
Now, of course, it's not the most famous David Ortiz speech, right? That one was after the Boston bombing, where, after the marathon, where I can't say what he said on the air because we don't have a beep ready to go. But David Ortiz, did he give him advice on if your career is struggling to use performance-enhancing drugs to get
what
it
he
back
said,
to
resiliency and failure, baby. He hinted at it.
Topic number three.
All right, Chris.
Allegedly. I don't want to
allegedly
anything.
Chris, would you rather watch, I'm guessing it's NBA teams coached by the Iceman, Dr. J, Rick Barry, and Allen Iverson?
Well, it might not be NBA, but it is basketball. The Big Three had their draft. Now, what is the Big Three? Well, it's this three-on-three league that they're doing this summer that has basically old retired NBA guys and the coaches of these teams. Allen Iverson. Now, I'm going to guess that team isn't going to practice very much. Practice. We're talking about practice, man. Gary Payton's a coach. I would want him on my team if the competition was trash-talking. George Gervin, the Iceman, Rick Barry, Dr. J, Clyde Drexler. Charles Oakley is listed as a player coach. Mike Dolan's not going to be invited to that game, or James Dolan, or any of the Dolans. Rick Mahorn is also a coach. So This is going to be pretty fun. I might watch. Reuben Patterson's playing. Kwame Brown. Yeah, Kwame Brown, like Stephen A. Smith says, he's in. Rasul Butler. So a lot of former NBA players, old. Hopefully they don't roll any ankles because they might not be able to recover very fast.
So are Iceman, Dr. J, Rick Barry, and Allen Iverson not playing? They're just coaching?
No, Iverson's also a captain, so I think Iverson's playing. Payton is not listed as a player, but you know, I don't know if this thing will have rules. So you put Gary Payton in, see what happens. Chauncey Billups is in this thing. He's a captain. 3-on-3 basketball is where it's at.
And where is it going to take place?
Different cities. Barclays Center is hosting some of it. Some of it's going to be in Miami. Basically, places where retired players want to go to. So New York, Miami, Vegas. So all the fun places. They're not going to go to Salt Lake City.
Topic number four.
To set you up for your next one, Golden State would have rather faced the Clippers than the Jazz. What is the reason for that?
Hey, it's all about the location. Andre Iguodala says there's no vibe in Salt Lake as compared to Los Angeles. Kevin Durant says there's no clubs in Salt Lake as compared to Los Angeles. And Matt Barnes pretty much echoed it, saying there's no nightlife in Salt Lake. It's all about the downtime between the games. You've got at least a day off in between games. So they're looking for things to do. And L.A. scores high. Salt Lake does not. So we'll see if the Warriors maybe get lulled into just being asleep and lethargic because there's not much to do. Or maybe because there's not much to do, the Warriors will go out there and crush them by 30 points every night because they'll be well-rested.
Yeah, they're worried about just them being bored. It's fun that they're just totally disrespecting the Utah Jazz. Their biggest opponent is the fact that they're bored. I mean, really, think about that. Their biggest opponent is the fact that the city is very boring, that it is that Rudy Gobert and Joe Johnson and Gordon Hayward are on the other team.
When you travel with college teams, they don't give them much of an opportunity to go out, if any.
Yeah.
So the difference between Laramie and Honolulu is not that much in the Mountain West because you really don't get a chance to do much more in Honolulu than you do in Laramie.
Quick Hits with Bob and Chris on 93.1 The Ticket.
Which just sets up the natural question of you got to do your Mountain West rankings. Like, let's say you're one of the rules are off. There's no more rules. You can do whatever you want in the Mountain West. What would be
I'm a fan and I get to just go?
Yeah, sure. You got the destinations. Apparently, Salt Lake City, nobody want to go there, according to the mindset of the Golden State Warriors. So
we're talking about everything non-football.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I would have to probably go with Honolulu number one.
Yeah, that's an easy choice.
Okay, and especially if I didn't have to prep and I didn't have to call a game in the press box that's not very good. We're just talking about having a good time there. All right, off the top of my head, I think I'd probably have to put San Diego as number two.
Weather seems like it plays a big part of your choices.
Absolutely. Things to do. Beach, both places.
Yes.
The beach in Honolulu probably a little warmer, generally speaking, than the beach in San Diego. All right, let me see. Where am I going to go for three?
UNLV's a part. You're not
Vegas.
A
Vegas. Will be
okay. There you go. See, I did have a good suggestion.
Yeah, you did. You did. And some people might move Vegas to two.
Yeah,
I'll still leave San Diego as two. Las Vegas will be three. Those to me are easily the top three.
Okay, now bottom three. Let's start to make people mad.
Ooh,
Laramie does that have to be at the bottom? It's hard to get to two. Laramie has to be last. I want to put that.
Laramie Logan is probably in the bottom in the league.
Ooh. Throwing shade at Logan. But again, it has to do more with weather. Like a lot of your experiences there is cold, is windy. Yeah. Logan in basketball season, you can't go outside unless you're in, you know, a big old heavy coat. So yeah, I can see it. My list is pretty similar to yours.
Yeah, well, who else would you put?
I don't get Hawaii, though, because it's women's basketball. I don't get Hawaii. So that's
why could they be in the league? They need to be in the league.
Maybe next year they'll get to play a non-conference. But it does matter. Like, I don't know if it matters for a player, though. At this point, people get upset like when players are out and they don't think it means – they think it means they're not focused. They're out clubbing at 2 and 3. But you almost have to consider what a professional athlete's body clock is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they have to be at their peak form at 7 o'clock at night. For your job, you have to be at peak form probably from 9 in the morning until 5. So their body schedule is completely different. So you can't really criticize them for, what, after a big game like that, what, you want them to go to sleep? No, they're not ready to go to sleep after the game. They, you know, your bodies wind up. They get something to eat. Go out to the club. Go get something to drink. And then they can also sleep in a little bit longer than you can.
You did minor league baseball as I did.
Mm-hmm.
You would have a game that would go from 7 to 10. By the time the team showered or you did your post-game show, pick stuff up, you probably wouldn't be back to the hotel till close to midnight.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd go get something to eat. I would say it'd be very rare that you'd get to bed before 2 on any given day.
That's exactly how it works. Yeah. And unlike the players, I got to be at the ballpark a little bit
And earlier. Didn't you hate those noon Sunday games after a Saturday night?
The worst. Oh, the worst. Absolute worst. Not even, like, Sunday after the game, though, you might enjoy it a little bit.
Baseball's best efforts aren't celebrated the way they should. My thoughts next when we come back on Sports Radio The Ticket.
This is Idaho Sports Talk. Now, the voices of Bronco Athletics, Bob Beeler and Chris Lewis on Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.
Hour number 2 of Idaho Sports Talk, Bob Beeler, Chris Lewis, Caves Prater coming up at 3, and at 3:15 they will have Dirk Cutter on to talk with him about the drafting of Jeremy McNichols, as well as adding 2 Bronco free agents, Thomas Spurbeck and Jonathan Moxie. Chris, I'm sure this weekend you paid great attention to the NFL draft and probably didn't pay as much attention to one of the greatest feats in the history of their sport, baseball, by third baseman Anthony Rendon for the Nationals.
Wow. Okay. Great history. Historic. One of the best ever. I'm looking forward to knowing about this.
6 for 6, 3 home runs, 10 runs batted in.
Jeez.
6 hits, 10 RBIs has only happened one other time in history, 1949. And I was trying to put this in perspective of how big a deal it is. And I'm going to contend that baseball gets hurt because a lot of their best individual game performances are not done by people that people know. Where if you look at comparative performances in football and basketball, it's always done by A-list people.
Okay, so you're saying, what does this compare to? Now, that's the one thing. You're trying to compare it to other sports. What is a 6-for-6, 10 RBI game compare to?
I'm going to compare it to a 50-point, 20-rebound game.
50-point, 20-rebound game?
If LeBron did 50 and 20, how much trumpeting would there be right now? How much trumpeting would there have been by you?
If it went for 50 and 20, that would be out of this world. That would be, oh my gosh, put him on the Mount Rushmore of basketball right next to Michael Jordan, especially if it was in a playoff game. But, yeah, 50 and 20, it's like Wilt Chamberlain stuff right there. Anybody else really doing 50 and 20?
There have been 3 since 1983. So now guys like Chamberlain,
rebounds.
50 and 20.
Well, did Hakeem do it once?
Shaq,
okay.
Chris Webber.
C-Web, wow.
And Anthony Davis.
That's right. Anthony Davis did have one of those.
There's only been 2 in Major League Baseball history, and there have been 3 for 50 and 20 since 1983. So it's more rare.
Embarrassing.
All right. Now I'm thinking of quarterbacks, because in football, quarterback is the position. How rare of a performance are you going to get to for the 6-for-6 and 10 RBIs? Forget about the 3 home runs.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't include that. But that includes with the 10 RBIs. You're probably going to have some home runs to get that. What if I told you there were 18 games in the NFL in which a quarterback threw for more than 500 yards in a game? It's pretty special, right?
Yeah.
18 times. Now, if I want to move the bar up for number of touchdown passes with the 500 yards, how many of the 18 do you think I'd have to get to?
Ben Roethlisberger did it once.
He did it. 6. If I use 6 as my bar, Ben Roethlisberger is 1 main name, right?
Yep.
Big time name. Okay? Come on, Fish, you can get the second one. You have to be able to get the second
one. I'm assuming it's Drew Brees then.
That is correct.
What about Peyton Manning, the opener against the Ravens? He didn't
Not enough TDs.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a good
500
choice.
Yards, 6 touchdowns.
Was Brady doing in any of his super season with Randy
You guys
Moss?
May not have ever heard of the guy that did it, but trust me, he was a name. I don't remember him as a player. Y.A. Tittle.
Oh, Y.A. Tittle. I heard the name.
Yep. So those are the 3 guys, 500 yards, 6 or more touchdowns. That's still not as few as that did the 6-for-6 and 10 RBIs. Now, my question is, how much would baseball have gotten a bump over the weekend if the 6-for-6 3 home runs and 10 RBIs came off the bat of Bryce Harper?
I think it's completely different. I think it's 100% different, actually. I think Bryce Harper is now the... This is what we were waiting for. Last year was a down year. And Bryce Harper, by the way, is having a very good start to the year. But it would have been the ultimate, like, all right, let's write a bunch of feature stories because he's everything that we said he was. And this is evidence of it. 6-for-6 with 3 homers and 10 RBI. We're now building a graphic of him next to Babe Ruth for some kind of comparison. I don't know what the comparison is, but it would be there.
Anthony Rendon plays for the Nationals, the guy that did it. When you look at his career numbers, he's played 5 years. He's a lifetime 274 batting average. Not bad. He has a total of, mind you, he had three home runs yesterday. He has 56 home runs over 4 years and change. So he averages about 12 to 15 home runs a year. And he had 10 RBIs yesterday. He has only 243 lifetime RBIs.
When you say, like, baseball, some of its biggest breakout individual games have come from just relatively unknowns. Do you have any more, you know, examples? We know, like, you can look at the list of no-hitters and perfect games.
Okay, perfect game in the World Series, Don Larson.
Yeah.
Probably the most famous pitched game ever. His career record was 81-91, and his ERA was almost 4.
So, yeah.
Johnny Vandermeer, back-to-back no-hitters. Now, kind of get an asterisk, they were pitched as two of the first night games ever in Cincinnati. 119-121 is his career record, his ERA about 3.5. You look at the list of guys with 4 home runs, which is the record for a game. You have some guys that are as famous as, like, Lou Gehrig and Willie Mays, and then you've got other guys that are guys like Mark Whitten that just, you know, people don't know much about.
Hard hitting.
It's the nature of it. You would never expect a 50-point game in the NBA to be put on by a down-the-line guy. It just wouldn't happen. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't happen.
Yeah, you look at the list of 50-point games. Like, Terrence Ross might be the most unknown guy in the NBA who's ever put up a 50-point game. And it's completely – you're right. The greats only put up individual showcase games, which almost will go to show you why I think your performance that you're mentioning, while it's great, it's a little bit overstated, is because to go 6-for-6, it means that the rest of the lineup really sets you up. Because how often are you even getting 6 at-bats in a game? It's not common that you're getting 6 at-bats in a game.
In a 9-inning game.
In a 9-inning game with the opportunity to drive in that many runs. Because why I don't value the RBI stat when I compare head-to-head, which was why, you know, I thought it was a travesty when Miguel Cabrera won the MVP for winning the Triple Crown when Mike Trout had a better year, is because we valued RBI, and that was a product of Cabrera being in a lineup that had a lot more of a threat to it. When Trout, if you put him in that lineup with Cabrera, all of a sudden his RBI total would be much higher than Cabrera's actually was. And it was because the RBI is more of a product of your lineup around you than it is an individual player itself. So a lot of this has to do with how great Washington was in an individual game more than it had to do specifically. And 6-for-6 is 6-for-6, and 3 home runs is 3 home runs. But it's a lot of Washington putting him in a spot to do it.
Even though the record in Major League Baseball for RBI in a 9-inning game is 12, you're more impressed with the 6-for-6 and the 3 home runs than you are the 10 RBI.
Absolutely. 3 home runs, you crack those out of the park. 6-for-6, you got to hit in every at-bat. Some guy could go 6-for-6. I don't know what was his other at-bats besides the homers. Did he have a triple? Did he have a double? I don't know. But, like, somebody could go 6-for-6 with 4 home runs, and the other 2 at-bats he had were triples, and while it didn't drive in as many guys, I would think that would be a better individual game, right? If you had 4 home runs and 2 triples and going 6-for-6 and had 7 runs batted in, that to me is a better game than going 6-for-6 with 3 home runs and 10 runs batted in, because you as an individual did more. It just so happened that Rendon had guys on base to help him out.
Probably. I mean, because you're right. RBI, it depends. Maybe they've walked people in front of you.
Yeah.
Now, the game was probably helped out because it was the game that Syndergaard got hurt, got into the second inning and came out, and all of a sudden the Mets were basically just throwing the game away and throwing pitchers in there and just trying to get out of the game. So sometimes when things like this happen, and the final score was Washington 23 and the Mets 5, maybe the at-bats in the 7th, 8th, or 9th inning weren't as challenging as in other games. But still, you have to go 6-for-6, and you have to knock the ball out of the park 3 times. But it just when I think of great performances, I've never really thought of, I guess Nick Foles, maybe with the 7-touchdown game with the Eagles, is about the only one that when I'm thinking of.
He threw a 7-touchdown game?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Why do I remember this?
Did it against the Raiders, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, my goodness.
He's, when you look at the 7-touchdown passes that Foles shares, it's with people who, for the most part, are really good. Peyton Manning, Y.A. Tittle, George Blanda, Sid Luckman is on that list.
I did. I remember that now.
So his career is much more of a, who's Nick Foles?
Yeah.
Probably got him a contract.
Is the Anthony Rendon.
But, and you know, Rendon's not a bad player, good player, hit 274. But, again, you think about what people are talking about. If Bryce Harper has that same game yesterday, that game all of a sudden moves to front page.
And it's maybe why the NBA sells itself as star and celebrity, because whenever you have an impressive, out-of-this-world, historic-type performance, it's usually somebody like that doing it. Well, while baseball sells itself as, you know, it could be any given day, anybody could do something crazy. You never know when it's going to be, and you never know who it's going to be, because a lineup 1 through 9, you can't determine who's going to be up at a given situation. Mm-hmm. So it's the beauty of the different sports, and who comes through at a certain time in baseball is random, because you don't know who's going to be at the plate.
I think that's the biggest difference between the sports. If I'm in basketball and I'm coaching, other than the fact if my guy's hurt or fouled out, if I've got 10 seconds left and I want Michael Jordan to take the last shot with regards to Paul George, I can have Michael Jordan take the last shot.
Yeah.
But if I want Babe Ruth hitting in the ninth inning, if it's not his spot in the order, there's nothing I can do about it.
Save Babe Ruth as a pinch hitter. I don't think that's exactly what you want, though.
$25 will get you 50 to spend in the form of five $10 gift certificates this Friday at 9 a.m. at KTIK.com for authentic and unique takes on the traditional Greek gyro. The Gyro Shacks are built for the love of food and health, the Greek way, and our sweet deal this week, Friday at 9 a.m. at KTIK.com. What was it like to be at the draft? We're going to find out this year. It was special. It was outside in Philadelphia. Paul Jolovitz of WIP Radio is going to tell us what it was like for him and the fans there. That's next when we come back on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio, The Ticket. We are back on Idaho Sports Talk. Bob Beeler and Chris Lewis here on Sports Radio, The Ticket. Again, coming up at 3, Caves and Prater will take over. And at 3:15, head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, former Boise State coach Dirk Cutter, lining himself up with some Boise State Broncos. Doug Martin will get his take on Doug coming back, and I'm sure they'll ask him about taking Jeremy McNichols in the fifth round and getting a couple of free agent signings in Jonathan Moxie and Thomas Spurbeck.
He's doing the Chip Kelly. You got all the guys at, you know, at the university that you used to be at. Well, Chip Kelly was the one who coached those guys. Dirk Cutter didn't coach these guys when he was at Boise State, of course.
I hope it works out a little better for Dirk than it did for Chip.
That is true.
We had the NFL draft over the weekend. It was in Philadelphia. Paul Jolovitz is going to join us. He is from WIP Radio. Paul covered it. Paul, it looked like quite a scene. Was it as much of a party as it looked like?
I can't emphasize to you guys enough how great, and I'm as Chris, I'm a skeptic, but Philadelphia did such an amazing job with this draft. 250,000 people on the Ben Franklin Parkway. Beautiful area. You saw the overhead shots, the iconic Rocky statue, no arrests whatsoever, great weather. I mean, it was grand slam and then some. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, well, my question is, like, why in the world did the draft connect so much? I know Philadelphia, of course, you know, from the area, and they're passionate about football, certainly, but the draft, like, I didn't anticipate them to go, like, this nuts for it.
Well, Chris, the NFL doesn't do a lot of things right, but they did this one right. They had a huge area. You're familiar with it. On the Ben Franklin Parkway, there were things for everybody. If you wanted a stuffed mushroom with a Tampa Bay Buccaneer logo on it, there's somewhere you could find it. Anything for kids, for adults, all kinds of corporate tents, autograph sessions. And then for the draft picks, there was a draft stage. Meeting room was great. Everything was perfect, and a lot of people showed up Thursday, but then word of mouth went out, and people showed up Friday and Saturday, too. There's not one thing I would change. It was unbelievable.
Paul, how did the 3,000 seats that were sort of underneath, if you will, that were close to the stage, how were those tickets acquired by people? Do you know?
Bob, I'm going to have to give you the old Sergeant Schultz here. I know nothing, absolutely no idea. But I know there were a lot of people that wanted him, that's for sure.
Yeah.
There weren't enough, but absolutely no clue.
Paul Jolovitz, WIP Radio in Philly, joining us here on Idaho Sports Talk, Sports Radio, The Ticket, talking how the draft went down in Philly. What percentage, roughly, were people just, you know, a fan of their team flying out to Philly for it, and how much of it was just, like, Philly locals showing out and being passionate like they usually are?
Well, considering the fact that they didn't ask everybody, Chris, I would say about 70% were Philly, and there were people from everywhere. Everywhere and anywhere, and people from other countries, and Eagle fans from Idaho, and Buccaneer fans from California, and Buccaneer fans from Florida, and Bear fans from everywhere. You get the point. A beautiful beef stew of the NFL.
What was your expectation before going to this thing? I mean, you kind of describe what it would be like. They hit a home run, but I mean, they pulled it off. I mean, I wouldn't have expected it to be this good, would you?
Nope. And in fact, Bob, the day before the draft, it was 52 degrees, overcast, it rained some. As with anything outside, no matter what you schedule or where or who, the weather is the number one factor. And Mother Nature, you know, was pocket aces. It was a beautiful, beautiful day, beautiful 3 days. Nobody saw the site before. It had never been done before. People were upset about traffic delays. It's a very integral part of the city. The NFL insisted it be on the Rocky Steps, so the NFL, you know, the Eagles had to have it there. Everybody was kind of wondering, but I had no idea what it would be like, but I didn't expect it to be that good or that big.
Was there a plan B in case it did rain? Because if it rains, you still want to have it outside with all that?
No, technically, Chris, the draft was inside. I mean, the stage was covered and well covered.
Okay.
Rain would have had to basically come sideways to hit them, and the seats were covered. As for all the activities and all the tents, nothing for that. So you cross your fingers about the weather, and they got lucky.
All right, Paul, looking ahead, and we're visiting with Paul Jolovitz of WIP Radio in Philadelphia, covered the draft. Philadelphia has now set the bar for hosting drafts. I mean, it, to me, blew away what Chicago did
last year. Looked really good on TV.
Look great on TV.
Yeah.
You just look at the way it became a party. So what can other cities do? You've traveled around. Is there anything that you think now that another city is going to look at and say, well, we can do this, we can hold it here, that type of thing? Because Philadelphia is going to be tough to beat.
It really is. And I think other cities that are going to bid for it are obviously going to watch, you know, previous drafts. New York, I don't know what you're going to take out of Radio City, but Chicago and certainly Philly. Probably there are ideas today that there weren't 5 days ago from cities. Let's have it, you know, whatever their iconic site might be, have an idea to transform that. When you say Philadelphia raised the bar, Philadelphia raised the bar more than one. It's got people in meetings, I'm sure, all day today with thinking caps on, wondering, hey, if we bid for the draft, what can we sell the NFL? What can we do? But the number one thing, guys, and Chris, you know this as well. Philly people are just nuts. They're crazy sports fans. They're crazy local fans. You heard it every time the Eagles picked, or the Cowboys, or anybody else, or the boos that Roger Goodell got. Replicating that fan base and those people, the local people, is not going to be easy for anyone.
So on the note of that craziness, did Philadelphia earn themselves a Super Bowl? I mean, they've shown they're not afraid to put it in what's deemed a cold weather place. They had it in New York. So could Philadelphia, with the way they handled the draft, did they potentially put themselves in the mix to possibly get a Super Bowl one day?
They didn't hurt themselves, Chris. Just strangely enough, I don't want a Super Bowl.
Really?
I personally want it to be in a warm weather site. I'm not very weather-centric, but about the Super Bowl is a party, and you got to have things for people to have at a party. Philly is obviously an amazing town, but I'm just a fan of outside outdoor Super Bowls, go to the beach, go to this, go to that, good weather. So I don't want a Super Bowl. If we have one, that's great, but not for me. But I think they couldn't hurt themselves, that's for sure. I still don't think there'll be a Super Bowl coming to Philly, but it was only a step forward for those who want it.
Paul Jolovitz, WIP Radio in Philadelphia.
Appreciate the time. I'm surprised you didn't call me by a name that wasn't Chris, because you usually do that when you come on the show. So I'm at least
nothing
happy that...
about the actual draft, guys. Nothing at all.
Well, I mean,
I prepared for hours and hours and hours.
All right, grade the Eagles draft then. What, are people happy about the Eagles draft?
Yeah, they were. I mean, it was a solid draft. There's nothing, no wow factor in the Eagles draft. Barnett, the first pick, very solid pick. Nobody knew who he was in Philadelphia or anywhere else. Didn't watch college football that much. But I had one problem with the Eagles draft, and you guys may disagree with this. I did not like the Sidney Jones pick in the second round. I just simply, every situation is different, and I was just kidding, the absolute best from a personal level now, obviously. But I don't take guys who are injured very often. I pretty much pass on them unless I think it's a complete slam dunk, home run in the making. And an Achilles injury, a reactionary position like cornerback, I just get the heebie-jeebies with. The other picks I thought were fine, and I'm praying for Jones, but I did not like that pick.
Yeah, shout out Joel Embiid, picking guys who are injured. I guess DJ Pumphrey, by the way, Mountain West back for San Diego State. He's one of those pass-catching type smaller guys. Doug Peterson there with Philadelphia basically running the show, calling plays. Does he use those type of backs, those pass-catcher smallish guys?
Well, he has one, Chris. His name is Darren Sproles.
True.
And people are already calling Pumphrey Sproles V2.0. He absolutely does. The West Coast offense, Peterson style, I guess you can call it, calls for pass-catching backs. Pretty much everybody here wanted Christian McCaffrey. They didn't go up and get him, and he went at 8. So a pass-catching back like that was pretty much in the radar. And for a fourth-round pick, they could have done a lot worse than Pumphrey, who's terrific, who obviously paid a little price because of his size. But the same way I stay away from injured players, I don't care how big or how small you are, I go the Billy Beane route. I'm looking for football players. Not the Marlboro man, and this guy's a football player.
There you go. So, all right, did we cover everything we need to cover with you? You prepare for hours, so I don't want to let you go if you got more information.
Well, the weather of the Jersey Shore here is beautiful.
Okay, we know we're good.
Yeah.
Paul Dalvitz, no, appreciate
it. Thank you very much, guys. Love to come on anytime.
Thanks, appreciate it.
WIP Radio in Philadelphia, Paul Jolovitz on Idaho Sports.
I got married in suburban Philadelphia on the New Jersey side in June of 2015, and I can tell you, weather, because we were doing it outside, was huge. It rained in the morning, cleared off in the afternoon, so I know how the NFL was feeling. Sweating bullets until that weather broke.
Yeah, I don't, like, Philadelphia being on display like that for the draft, like, I don't get homesick much, but when there's a big sporting event in my city and then they start showing the scenics and everything, that's when it starts to hit me. Like, I'm usually not one to be like, ah, man, I wish I was home. But it was one of those times where, you know, when they're hosting playoff games, when they had the Monday night football game or the Sunday night football game, and right here when they had the draft, those are the times where it's like, man, it'd be you know, pretty cool to see what's up, what's going on.
And I've been to the Museum of Art, the Rocky Steps, if you will, and that's definitely, if you're talking about iconic places to go in Philadelphia, lived in Pennsylvania for 13 years, not nearly as close as you, but people would come in, we'd drive them into Philadelphia. That was usually one of the spots people wanted to go. $25 will get you 50 to spend in the form of five $10 gift certificates this Friday at 9 a.m. on KTIK.com for authentic and unique takes on the traditional Greek gyro. The gyro shacks are built for the love of food and health, the Greek way, and it's our sweet deal this week, so get it. Be quick. Friday at 9 a.m. at KTIK.com. Fish, we've got another update coming up. What do we have in it this time?
Well, the City of Philadelphia had a slam dunk with the draft. Boise State didn't do too bad themselves with two players drafted and a handful more signings, undrafted free agents. Plus, about a week ago, Derek Jeter and Jeb Bush basically owned the Marlins. They've gone backwards ever since. More on that in the sports update on Idaho Sports Talk next.
The Ticket Sports Update.
The Ticket Sports Update is sponsored by Big Judd's. Try the all-new deep-fried pickle spear and nacho burger at Big Judd's on Protest Hill near Boise State and in Meridian on Overland near Eagle Road. NFL draft was over the weekend, and Boise State made out pretty well. They had two players drafted, Jeremy McNichols by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Tanner Vallejo by the Buffalo Bills. And they had four players signed as undrafted free agents, Thomas Spurbeck and Jonathan Moxie have both signed with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And Tampa Bay Buccaneers head coach Dirk Cutter will be on Idaho Sports Talk at 3:15. Talk about the decision to sign both those players and to draft Jeremy McNichols and the future of Doug Martin. Other players signed: Travis Averill signed with the Atlanta Falcons. Sam McCaskill signed on with the Minnesota Vikings. He will be on tomorrow at 1:15 to talk about that decision. Plus, Chancellor James has tryouts set up with the Saints and 49ers, and Mario Yaku has tryouts set up with the Redskins and Raiders. So good all around for Boise State. Six players in total on a team. Two more perhaps to go.
Best note I saw: Alabama, Clemson, Florida, Florida State, LSU, Penn State, Stanford, USC, Washington, and Boise State. Those are the only 10 schools that have had an early, somebody that left early get drafted in the last 4 years. Pretty good company.
Each of the last 4 years.
Each of the last 4 years, correct.
That's a pretty good list to be on.
Yeah, it's pretty, that's Boise State representing themselves pretty well.
What do these teams mean? You look, ooh, these are all pretty good football teams.
Now you can almost look how they all doing. Generally, what, DeMarcus Lawrence?
Yeah. Correa?
Contributing. Correa, decent year last year.
Jay did okay last year.
Jay was, Jay did pretty well. Now Jeremy McNichols.
Yeah.
And we'll go stick in the Mountain West. We'll go to basketball. Elijah Brown, the grad transfer from the University of New Mexico, is heading towards the University of Oregon. That, according to CBS's John Reistein. Brown committed to the Ducks over the weekend. He averaged 18 points and 5.2 rebounds per game. On his Twitter, he simply tweeted out, quack, and switched his header to a picture of the Oregon Ducks. We would assume that Reistein knows what he's talking about.
I wonder how many guys in college basketball can say that they'll play for three different teams.
I mean,
he played for Butler first, didn't like it there, and then went to New Mexico, and then left and's going to Oregon.
You do see a lot of movement now, I guess more than you used to, but you do see, like, you went from here to junior college to this, and now transferring to the third program. Very rarely do you have three programs that have been, generally that successful. Now, maybe New Mexico didn't reach the heights that they wanted to while he was there. Butler, very good basketball program. And now Oregon, a team that's been in contention really for a championship the last couple of years. So that's about as good as it gets.
And I think now the grad transfer might allow you to play for three, because when you transfer the first time, you have to sit out. So that burns one of your years. You can only play for 5 years total. One of them is sit out. So the grad transfer really is what opens the door to it, because you can play immediately if you transfer as a graduate.
And bad news for Boise State forward Chandler Hutchinson. The NBA has released their invite list to the NBA Draft Combine. Hutchinson did not make the list. He can still return to school by May 24th unless he hires an agent. However, Mountain West player Cam Oliver from Nevada did receive an invite to the Combine. Now, he has already hired an agent, so he cannot go back to school, but he did receive an invite, but no invite for Hutchinson to the NBA Combine.
Which might be some of the reason why having an agent at early in the process does give you an advantage. And we talked to James Webb about this last year. I believe he hired an agent before the Combine list came out. He didn't make the Combine, but he still was able to have workouts and things lined up because of the fact that the agent has connections. Now, I don't know what the future will be for Chandler Hutchinson and what he'll decide to do, but you can see why that there would be an advantage to having an agent if you really committed to this process. There's a lot that goes into between now and when the draft actually takes place in the NBA in, what was it, late June?
The draft's usually somewhere around the 25th, 30th of June, somewhere in there. I wasn't surprised. I mean, there's a lot of people that are declaring, plus the seniors. It's tough. There's only a little more than 60 that get invited to the draft combine. Not to make that list, you can still be a pretty good player.
And, well, we go to Major League Baseball now. It seems like my Miami Marlins, they weren't on the move in terms of where they're going to play, but they were on the move ownership-wise. Looked like Derek Jeter and Jeb Bush had all but purchased them. They had won a bid for $1.3 billion, and they were just all they needed was the money. Well, now that has completely changed. A source close to the group says that the $1.3 billion was leaked out and it's inaccurate. The group apparently only bid about $1 billion, and they believe the Marlins have been spreading around inaccurate information. So a source said that they are considering perhaps withdrawing their bid. That would leave Tag Romney and Tom Glavine as the last remaining group. Major League Baseball still says they're negotiating with two groups. So they weren't even that close, but absolute disaster for the Miami Marlins in terms of ownership. Once again.
Number one, I'm not so sure they're worth the $1.3 billion.
I would not believe they are.
But they're obviously trying to get the bid up as high as possible. Oh, you're going to pay this, so maybe they're going to pay that. Enough teams can be for sale. If Bush and Jeter want a team, I'm sure they can probably find one at some point. But like I said before, they're not people with the deep pockets. They got to find that whale out there that's got the money. And I think that there's still questions of whether they've got enough money even to get to a billion.
And May 3rd is the option date for the fifth-year option for NFL draft picks in the first round from 2013. Perhaps in a surprising move, the Jacksonville Jaguars have announced that they will pick up that option on Blake Bortles. So he will be their quarterback through 2018. And his salary for 2018, a nice little jump. He's getting paid about $3 million this year. It'll be $20 million in 2018, the average of the top 10 highest-paid quarterbacks. Remember, that salary is not fully guaranteed outside of injury until the first day of the 2018 league year.
Nothing says $20 million like trailing 21-0. And that's typically what you are when you have Blake Bortles as your quarterback. You're down 21-0 because early in the game, he's not good, and then he racks up a lot of stats at the end, and he's great for your fantasy team, but he's not so good for the Jags. Now, it's weird. You would have thought that in this draft they might have addressed quarterback, but they really didn't attack it in the way we thought.
And I'm surprised that they would agree to give him that much money in 2018. I don't think he's a top 10 quarterback.
That's the bold opinion of the day from Bob Beeler.
I had him 11th. I think I'm going to move him down now because Bob said that. Now, hey, nothing stops you from drafting a quarterback when you owe another quarterback $20 million, right, Chicago? So, I mean, this doesn't change anything.
It's happened to a lot of them. We chronicled that earlier in the show. I mean, yeah, it's everybody wants a quarterback. Everybody's looking for one. He's amazing.
You're not at an advantage when you have Blake Bortles as your quarterback. And maybe he has the skills, the tools, but like at what point? He has two of the best receiving weapons over the last couple of years that you could actually have. He's had running backs who were drafted in the first couple of rounds in the backfield.
He's got another one
to help him out. Now he has another one. Like, how much are you going to keep investing on offense before you realize the reason why your offense doesn't get off to great starts is because your quarterback, it takes him a half to get going. And, hey, he's pretty good when he's against the prevent defense, though. He looks really good when the safeties are dropping back. Corners are off the line of scrimmage. He can pick you apart then.
Oh, yeah. That's what you need, right? You don't want to be embarrassed too much if you're in Jacksonville. And we'll end with an interesting note from Major League Baseball. John Boreman made his Major League debut Sunday for the Pittsburgh Pirates, a loss 10-3 to my Miami Marlins, by the way. Why is this interesting? That's because Boreman was headed to a Class A game. The day he got the call, the Pirates starting catcher Francisco Cervelli is out with a sore foot. Boreman was only up I-75 up in Florida, so they rerouted him, sent him down. He went 0-for-1 with a strikeout in the ninth inning. So from single A to Major League Baseball, there you go, John Boreman. I wonder if his mom believed him, unlike the Giants guy a couple days ago.
Christian Arroyo's had a couple of home runs for the Giants. But the thing about Boreman, they needed somebody to catch. It's kind of a position either player you don't. They had a quick injury. They needed to put somebody in. That's how come he got it. When I was announcing in Chattanooga in the mid-'80s, we had a guy get called up to play for the Mariners in New York. And the only reason why he was selected, they wanted a left-hand hitting outfielder. The AAA team was in Calgary. It would have taken them too long, and it was too expensive to get him there. He was there for 3 days, never got in the game.
Why does that not happen for broadcasters? This guy can't make it. Let's call up the guy who's doing the single A affiliate, and he can do the major league game for a day. That doesn't ever happen.
It does in your dreams, right?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Bob, maybe. Bob's locked in his house, Chris. We're going to need somebody for the... Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. I mean...
Better check your locks, Bob. You may not be able to get out
on
game day.
Bob, he just needs to... Nothing bad needs to happen to him.
Clarence has escaped and he is running around Boise. Bob will be unavailable. We need a backup. Oh, there's one right in the area. Chris Lewis. Can you believe
it? I think Chris has his sights on bigger fish than what I have to offer.
That when he said that, was the first thing that came to my mind. Local broadcasters.
If something bad happened to Bob and he came up missing.
Whoa,
I'm a person of interest.
I didn't know.
Because,
who
has something to gain? And people may think I have something to gain. No, I don't have anything to gain.
Number one suspect. Bob.
So I better be careful with what you're saying.
You better stay far away from Chris as you can.
I'm saying you better be careful because I don't want to be blamed for anything that bad that happens to you is what I'm saying. So, Bob, take care of yourself because if something else happens, everybody's running to me.
I'll take care of myself. Good. Tampa Bay head coach Dirk Cutter will join Idaho Sports Talk. Visit with Caves and Prater today at 3:15. Get the details on the McNichols draft and the free agency status of Spurbeck and Moxie. Again, that's all coming up today at 3:15. Last week was a good week for Chris. I need to redeem myself. Our picks are coming up next on Sports Radio The Ticket.
It's time to consult the magic eight ball, open up a fortune cookie, or maybe even flip a coin.
I sent him into the future.
However they do it, it's time for some quick picks and predictions with Bob and Chris.
And quick picks and predictions is sponsored by Pro-Am Sports, your full-service pro shop and bowling specialist with high-quality bowling balls, bags, shoes, and accessories located right inside Westie's Garden Lane in Garden City. Now, before we get into the quick picks, week one is over. Chris Lewis, you obliterated Bob, including going 4-0 on the NFL draft night. How does it feel to take the early lead?
It just feels like what's supposed to happen.
Wire-to-wire victory.
When the sun comes up every day, you feel like, you know, the sun's supposed to come up. That's what happens every day. When the grass is green, hey, it's supposed to be green. I do better at picks of Bob. That's what's supposed to happen. Whooped him on the draft 4-0. I think I had a better record than him on baseball, too, throughout the week. So smacked him in Major League Baseball. He was blinded by the fact that his Giants and Dodgers were having a series, and he was so pessimistic about his Giants. And guess what happens
against
this week?
Giants
and the Dodgers face each other again this week. So he's going to be distracted again. But got it done, week number one. Expect a lot more weeks like this. We'll keep track, of course.
Tiger Woods victory, I believe, wire to wire.
Yes, exactly.
All right, we'll start with pick one. Round two of the NBA for four teams starts tonight. We'll go with pick number one. We'll start with you, Chris. You are the defending champ from last week. Who wins tonight, the Spurs or the Rockets? Spurs won 3 out of 4 in the regular season, but the games were decided by 2, 2, 2, and 6.
Ooh. I'm going to go with the Rockets, though. Game one, I think this is the one you steal if you're on the road, your road team. I think this is going to be a long series. Probably be 6 or 7. I like Houston to win this series, although they play their greatest against Oklahoma City. This is a tough matchup, though, for any team because they spread the floor, and the way San Antonio plays, they like to play two bigs at once, whether it's Gasol and Aldridge. That means Aldridge is going to have to defend out at the three-point line, not what he wants to do. They don't have guards quick enough to contain James Harden unless they put Kawhi Leonard on him, and if Kawhi has to guard James Harden and then score 25 to 35 on the other end of the floor, that is asking a lot. I think the Rockets steal game one.
I would love to take the Spurs because I think they're home. I think they're good. They're solid. But I agree with Chris. I think the Rockets are going to get it done. I think they're playing a little better right now than the Spurs are. I think they're a little younger. I think they play a little better together. I will also take Houston to win game one.
Well, you can't gain anything on them there, Chris.
Well, it's a new week, so I can't lose anything either on it.
That's true. That's true. Now, we like to pick winners sometimes in quick picks, but we're going to go with a loser today. The Kansas City Royals have lost 9 in a row. They play the Chicago White Sox at home. They played the White Sox in a 3-game series exactly a week ago and were outscored 27-8. So, Bob, will the Kansas City Royals lose their 10th in a row tonight?
The answer to that question is no. Kansas City snaps the string. Jason Vargas has been their best starter. He's 3-1 with a sub-2 ERA. Kansas City does not lose a 10th in a row. They win this one and win their 8th game of the season.
Chris?
Meanwhile, Dylan Govey for Chicago hasn't pitched too much, 3 starts, but his ERA is awful. His ERA is 6.91, 14 and a third. He's giving up 11 earned runs. So I'm with Bob. Kansas City better win this game because if not, they might lose their other next 4 starts with Vargas, you know, their best pitcher so far this year. So Kansas City ends the 9-game skid today.
Do we know, Bob, do you know who the last team Kansas City beat was by chance?
It was the Giants.
It was. It would be an 11-game losing streak if the Giants could have closed business, but they beat them 2-0 before the
With Vargas winning, by
yes.
the way.
And the final pick will go to NHL. Bob says this is his specialty, maybe a chance to gain a game. Game 3 between the Pens and Capitals tonight, the two best teams in the NHL. The Pittsburgh Penguins won 2 on the road, so they're up 2-0. Who do you got tonight, Chris Lewis, winning? Pittsburgh Penguins or the Washington Capitals?
I can't believe the Capitals are going to fall behind 3-0. They're Ovechkin there, number one seed. How many times are they going to have the best record and completely fall apart in the postseason? They get it done at least in one game. They can't get swept out the paint by Pittsburgh. I know they're on the road and they lost their 2 games at home, but come on. Washington, I know your reputation falling apart in the postseason. You can't fall apart this bad, though.
I'm going to take a 1-0 lead. I'm going for the Penguins at home. Penguins always seem to have the Capitals' number in the playoffs. I think they've won 8 of the 9 series. They've faced each other. Pittsburgh makes it 3-0. It's a tough place to play. I look for Pittsburgh tonight.
Bob went with the smart idea. Agree twice and disagree once so you can only fall behind 1 game.
Or I can be ahead 1 game.
That's
to
true.
Know.
That's true.
Caves and Prater coming up. Don't forget Dirk Cutter in a matter of minutes. He's the head coach of the Tampa Bay Bucks. Chris and I will be back at 1. Caves and Prater next on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.